B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
Who they are right now. I think they need a performance to get their confidence back. Well, and they're hoping it comes more than knowing it will come.
Yeah, but that's like what I was talking about yesterday when I talked to Zach Ertz. Zach Ertz said that this offense just needs that one game to start clicking again. Well, the offense had the game. Zach Ertz, unfortunately, dropped a couple of big passes there. Two probably touchdowns, right? One was in the end zone. But the offense looked like, I mean, Jim Schwartz even admitted to you yesterday they lost this game because of the defense and their lack of the ability to make the adjustments. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. You are listening to 97.5 The Fanatic, WPN Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity studio, only from Comcast. And ladies and gentlemen, on the line with us right now, Temple Owl head coach of the men's basketball team, former 76er, our good friend Aaron McKee. Coach McKee, what's happening?
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
As a Sixer fan, Aaron, as a Temple alum, I'm doing fantastic, and a lot of it has to do with you. Is coaching your own basketball team, being the head coach, everything you thought it could be and more?
It is. It is. Before I get into that, I want to... Trey, you on the line?
Yes, sir.
I want to apologize to you. I got the call. I just didn't get back to you. So we'll talk about that after we get off the air.
Yeah, it's all good. You know, I knew you were busy. I wasn't going to say anything. I was just going to wait until I bump into you.
What is it with you and former Temple Owl and former Sixers?
It's only been like maybe 3 months.
It's you and Mark Jackson you have a big feud with now. What's going on here?
You mean Mark Jackson what?
Mark Jackson and Trey Thomas apparently are feuding.
No, we're not feuding.
I'm going to stay away from them big fellas.
Aaron, obviously, it's just been a great start to the season for you guys. Just as a basketball coach and as the team, what do you think has been working the most for you?
Defensively. We've been really good defensively. And I think it's more so our preparation. We come out every game and we play with great energy. And that's what you really want. You don't really want to get off to slow starts. So our defense is a little ahead of our offense right now, and it's been working for us early on.
You turned a lot of people's heads. It was unfortunately the only loss on the season, and I hate to go to that, but a lot of people looked at that game against Maryland. Very close, down the stretch. Unfortunately, Maryland hit some big shots, and you guys are 6-1 now on the year. But that was a big attention getter when it took on, I think at the time, the fifth-ranked team in the nation.
Yeah, a pretty good team. You know, they passed the eye test on a number of different levels. They got speed, they got length, they got athleticism, they defend well, they can score the ball. So they have a lot, and I think we can go nose to nose with those guys. You know, unfortunately down the stretch we didn't pull it out, but it's a learning opportunity for myself. It's a learning opportunity for my team.
Quentin Rose is another guy that looks like he is, I mean, really, last year he did it, this year he's taking it to the next level. Seems like his game is only but improved defensively and offensively. What has he been working on to make sure he takes those next steps?
His focus, his game is maturing on the court, he's maturing, you know, off the court. He's a wonderful kid and put a lot of responsibility in his lap, you know, throughout the summer. And it's going to take some time for him to continue to grow. He's not a natural born leader, but he's taking on that responsibility with trying to help out some of the guys on the team, especially the younger guys. So I'm pleased with his progress, and hopefully that continues for us.
Aaron, you spent a lot of years, obviously, on NBA benches as an assistant coach, and now you know you've been in the college game for a long time. What are the biggest differences and the biggest similarities that you find in preparing teams on those levels?
Well, when you're having a conversation with a pro, he gets it right away. Like, those guys respond right away. And with college kids, you know, you're getting 17, 18, 19-year-old kids, and their minds are somewhere else. You know, they got classes and they got friends and social media and all these different things that distract them, and you got to pretty much hold their hand, and you got to constantly give them the information. And it's repetition, really, and really trying to do the same things, you know, all the time, and not giving them a lot because they can't take in a lot of information. So, you know, we try to keep it short and sweet and really simple for these guys.
Speaking with Aaron McKee, Temple basketball head coach, what's the most difficult part about going from player to coach? I've seen a lot of people talk about it over the years where, I mean, you played in the NBA, obviously. You had a great career. people that go from that part to trying to translate that to another player that might not have that same skill set, sometimes that communication can be difficult. What is the most difficult part about it?
I think removing myself from who I was as a player and how I paid attention to the details, because everybody's not wired like that. And so you got to meet these kids where they're at right now. You got to meet them. You know, before for me growing up and playing, I had to meet the coaches where they were at. Now you got to meet these kids halfway. And I think, you know, so often you find yourself, like when you say something, you expect those guys to respond right away, and it's not the case all the time. So have to be more patient, you know, with these guys and how I coach them. And you can't coach everybody the same way. You know, back in the day, that's just how it was. You coached everybody the same way. It's really your coaching personalities, and you're trying to get all of those personalities to mesh. But the common denominator in all of that is getting these guys to play hard.
Aaron, I read some of your quotes after the loss to Maryland, and it was funny. You were kind of like, I didn't know what to do. You didn't know how to react. Looking back on that, how did you feel upon it? Is it something that you have to better yourself at? I know you don't want to become accustomed to losing, but how do you feel looking back on how you reacted on that, on the only loss that you have this year?
I was pleased. I'm not pleased with the loss, but my guys competed.
Right.
We didn't come out with the victory, but these are the things that we talked about since the summer, and just getting in the gym and working. And I said, we could do everything right, and sometimes you're not going to get the result that you want, but it's okay. I told the guys it's okay, because we're moving in the right direction. And that's what you want to have your team doing. But now, after I watch film, after the game, I had smoke coming out my head, because I felt like we beat ourselves. We were careless, you know, with the ball. We had some turnovers that we shouldn't have had. We missed some assignments, and we missed some key plays down the stretch. But again, the beauty of it all is you get the opportunity to show them and clean up those mistakes and learn from it, and then you get a chance to play again.
You guys are taking on Missouri coming up on Saturday, December 7th. That's this Saturday, 7:30. We're actually giving away tickets to that game at the Lee Corps Center. Go to alicetix.com. Speaking with Aaron McKee, Temple men's basketball head coach. Want to transition a little bit more to the pros, because we had called upon a conversation that we had with you last year, Aaron, about this team, about the Sixers coming into their own and learning to play with each other, like a guy like Markelle Fultz in that starting lineup and all that. Mm-hmm. Now it's another new-look team to start out the season, off to a good start, as we all see, undefeated at home. That's great. How many games, though, do you think it'll take for this team to really reach that full potential?
I think, again, I will go back to who's the leader. Like, who's the guy? Is it Ben Simmons? Is it Joel Embiid? And I think the rest of the team has to feed off of those guys. You know, who's the guy that's going to be, you know, getting the ball at the end of games? Because now you have to start preparing for that now, because really when you look at the East, it's probably going to be the Sixers and the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. And you want to be able to identify that guy. And I'm not saying you have to identify it now, but I think, you know, the rest of the team have to understand who's our guy, who are we following? And I think they got a great chance, because they're making all their mistakes right now, but they'll be better for it moving forward.
Who do you think is that leader?
Yeah. I honestly, I don't know, because I really don't get a chance to watch a lot of professional basketball.
I'm sure you're a little busy, yeah.
Yeah, I'm watching a lot of college basketball, but I really believe that they have to identify one of those guys. I think it has to be a guy that's comfortable with shooting free throws at the end of games. Now, is it Joel? I think it's probably Joel, because he certainly has the personality to be that guy. And is it Ben? I don't know. I don't know if Ben is that guy. I certainly believe he could be. He's looking like he's playing a lot more confident. So it's going to be interesting to see. But I think they got a really, really good chance to not only come out of the East, but to win an NBA title.
You know, because we had the same conversation last year when we were talking about this. And it's like, to me, it has to be Joel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because of, like you just said, like his energy, everything that's surrounding him, it has to be him to take this team.
I mean, I agree. But, I mean, have you seen that up to this point?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes. You've had flashes. You had moments.
Listen, I know when I played with AI, it was only one guy we was looking for late in games, and it was him. And you had to play off of him. You know what I mean? If you talk about the Lakers, if you talk about Houston, You know, you got to play off of LeBron. Now, he's the facilitator, but you're playing off of him. Whatever he decides he wants to do, if he's posting up on the perimeter, you're going to play off him. If it's Houston, you're going to play off of James Harden. And I think, you know, the Sixers will certainly get to that point where they're playing off one of those guys. But their strength is a lot like, not saying our guys are as talented as them, but their strength is in their numbers. It could be any given player on any given night.
Now, because for us now, the one thing I want to ask, for us is for football, we only had 16 games that we had to get our mind up and get fired up to go out and dominate. How is it for you when you have an 82-game season to kind of keep that mindset game after game to keep coming out to try to dominate each game?
Being competitors, you know, what are you playing for? Are you playing for the passion? Do you want to be the best? I always wanted to be the best. You know, I always wanted to finish first, and that's got to be the mindset. We want to be first in the conference. We want to be first in the East. We want to win an NBA title. So if that's what drives you, then you're going to come out and you're going to play hard every night.
Aaron, are we kind of seeing a different way to approach the basketball game? You know, years back, everybody had to shoot threes, and the Golden State Warriors did that, and everybody kind of followed suit from pros to colleges. Now it seems to be, and you said it at the beginning, defense is key. There seems to be a lot of defense being played. Virginia wins a national title, defensive team. Sixers know they can't catch everybody shooting threes. They become a defensive team, a bigger team. I'm watching Penn Villanova last night. Jay Wright's going big, 6'9", all across the board. Is defense starting to dominate now?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, you know, you got some really good offensive teams in college and in pro. At one point, a couple years ago, I thought defense was becoming obsolete, where, you know, everybody wants to score 100 points, even on the college level, because it's an exciting brand of basketball. But again, you got to look at it from the standpoint, the better teams are the teams that's able to defend, the teams are able to get critical stops and tough situations doing games.
Speaking with Aaron McKee, last thing for you, if you had a player, and let's just say this, I know you said you're concentrating on the college hoops thing, but last thing for you, Aaron, if you had a player that came in that was great at rebounding, great at distributing, great at just about everything else, stealing the basketball, but they just didn't have that jump shot, even a mid-range game, how important would it be for that player, you know I'm talking about Ben Simmons, how important would it be for that player just to develop that other aspect of his game?
I think Ben's got to be Ben. Don't try to be what everybody else want him to be. I think he can dominate games without shooting jump shot. Now, he's going to have to work on it, and I don't think he's ever going to be a knock-it-out jump shooter.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you work on it. But I think there's so many ways that he can dominate a game. I enjoy when I watch him play. I enjoy watching him play because, you know, his speed, his size at 6'10", almost 7 feet, the way he can get up and down the floor, that's hard to deal with. And if I'm him, I would just be myself night in and night out because he can dominate games on so many levels.
Aaron, it's always great talking to you, man. We really appreciate you coming on. 6-1. That's what the Temple Owls are right now with you leading the charge. We appreciate it again, man. And again, the tickets at owlsticks.com as Temple takes on Missouri this Saturday at 7:30. Thanks so much, Coach.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
All right.
There
talk
we go.
To you soon.
There we see. You guys will get that thing worked out.
Oh, yeah.
You guys will be talking.
Yeah.
Trey and Temple guys, man.
I don't know what to do. What's your problem, bro?
No, that's good.
So why are you coming at my people?
I mean, I just shot him a text maybe a couple months ago, you know?
A couple never months
back.
Ago?
Yeah, never
he said
back.
3 months. Yeah. Aaron back. Knew it, too. He yeah. led with it.
Yeah. It's like, hey.
See, that's the thing.
Good job by Aaron, yeah. clearing yeah. the air.
I would have texted him before the show. I would have been like, hey, no, I'm coming on with you in a little bit. Just want to let you know, love you.
Like, hey.
Well, kissy face emoji. No, I don't know. 610-632-0975. 610-632-0975. Coming up, 8:30, we'll hear from Matt Gelb of The Athletic. He'll break down all things Zach Wheeler for us. Also, we'll get an update on our Twitter poll, and we'll hear a little bit more from the Eagles locker room. Mike and KOP have asked what might be the most interesting point he's ever made for us. Time of the Fanatic, 8:13.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning. The Fanatic.
8 o'clock hour here, brought to you by Martin Law, the law firm for injured workers. Visit paworkinjury.com. We got to talk about something here. Something just drastic happened. Bob, are you okay?
No. You know, every day it's something. Every day. I can't just go through work, have a good day, go home with a smile on my face. Every day he ruins it.
I thought it was, I heard about it. He mentioned it. But it's a lot worse than even I saw what happened.
It's not a proud moment for my family. for me personally, for my work career, none
of it. Happened, and I go, poor Skyler. First thing that came out of my mouth, poor Skyler.
Jamie and Bob ordered a pizza for breakfast, whatever. And that's
we've been up for 7 hours. Yeah, don't judge us.
Yeah, it's exactly. Whatever. You ordered a pizza. You can do that. It's fine. No judgment there. Pizza's good all the time, except on Thanksgiving. But here's the deal. Jamie, you were bringing the pizza up, and what happened?
Well, it was actually in the restaurant itself. I had it pinned on the counter against my hip, and when it came to payment time, I forgot it was leaning on my hip. So I went to go grab my wallet and hand it to Bob, and I moved slightly, and the pizza dropped.
This is like the Jason Kelsey prank, only this ain't funny.
It's twofold.
What do you mean?
So he ruined the pizza.
Yes.
And he never got out the wallet. So I wound up paying.
Oh, my goodness.
I tried to take the ugliest pieces. I'm teasing.
Actually, I respect your move, Jamie. That's top notch. No, so you dropped the pizza. It stayed within the box.
Yeah.
But then you just open it up in studio.
It's a mess.
It's just...
So I'm making a pizza burrito.
There you go.
I saw you take a handful of cheese.
Yeah, like it all came off.
You picked up a slice, and everything just fell right off, and it was just a piece of bread, basically.
Yeah.
And then you handful.
It's a dark day.
And you're like, go to hell with it. Yeah, it looks terrible.
Poor Skyler.
Mike and KOP, what's up, buddy?
Hey, how you doing? You guys doing today?
Listen to this amazing phone. What's up, Mike?
Hey, well, I got a fix for you guys. I wanted to talk and be all crystal clear with my negativity.
Okay. Thank you.
So you can keep your cleavage. You can keep your side boob. I'm an under boob guy all day, every day.
That is a nice item. That's quality.
Yeah. It's always never thought of. You never think of the under boob.
Right now, but with your wife, because you're so tall, do you even get to see under boob even in the early stages of dating?
Yeah. She kind of too tall, too. So.
Oh, okay.
I'm all right with it.
That's very good, man. What do you got on the birds?
It doesn't just have to be her underboob. It can just have underboob in general, guys.
That's true. We have an appreciation for all underboob.
Yeah. So, you know, whatever. They're not going to win this game. I feel like the Giants are getting everybody back that they just in time to kick our butt. Like, we're not winning. Like, this. I don't want to hear playoffs. Like, I just want to hear that old Indianapolis Colts guy on loop playoffs. I just want that. Anytime someone mentions we can still make it, that should be played.
I believe our own Pat Egan played Jim Mora during his update.
Anytime anybody brings that up, just do that and just knock them back and be like, "You're stupid. Like it's not happening. Like we're not making the playoffs. Like this team sucks." And Firehouse Howie Roseman. Have a great day, guys.
All right. Good. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it, man. You know, now Golden Tate's been dealing with an injury.
Yeah.
So is he? Do we know if he's going to play or not yet?
I heard yesterday he is coming back.
He is coming back. So you know what's going to happen there.
Looks like Evan Engram, Golden Tate are both coming back.
Okay. So you know what's going to happen. He's going to have at least one touchdown against the Eagles.
Oh, lock it up.
Hey, this is fun, isn't it? This is going to be
good time.
This is going to be a good time. Cowboy Kenny, what's happening, brother?
Hey, what's up, fellas, man? How y'all doing?
Hey, man.
All right, man. I got a question. I call with a question. What team do you guys think out of the NFC East could host the playoff game, that's going to host the playoff game? Which team do you think have the best chance to actually win it, man? The Cowboys or the Eagles?
The Cowboys. I'm being honest with you, like, of all the stuff that's going on, why in hell would I have any confidence that the Eagles would make the playoffs?
But I have no confidence in either one of them teams. I wish it could be some way that they can bypass the whole NFC East, because I look at it like this. Dallas probably wind up winning the division,
uh-huh.
And then we got to host the playoff game on national television against who, like the 49ers or Seattle or somebody.
Yeah.
And we're going to get short. You know what I mean? So I have to watch that. So.
Right, but
I don't really want to watch that.
But at least you have a 37-10 victory over the Eagles to fall back on as the better team.
Yeah, but I mean, what does that mean? What other good team did we beat all year?
Yeah, nobody.
We got smoked to everybody that was anybody.
Yeah, but
and then we lost to the Jets.
So wouldn't you just rather be in the playoffs? Like, I don't want to sell a Cowboys fan on making the playoffs here.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. At this point, the way this team is playing, I know they got talent and all that, but the way they're playing and the way they're being coached, I'd rather for them to miss this season. We get rid of the coach, bring in a better coach, and then see what we can do next year.
Do you want Ron Rivera?
Definitely want Ron Rivera.
All right. Well, it's probably going to happen, Kenny. Thanks for the call. Either New York's the most likely landing spot. be back with Dave Gettleman and being the Giants and be the Giants head coach after Pat Shurmur would get fired after this year. And then looking at maybe Jason Garrett getting fired in Dallas, most likely will. And that would be the other landing spot. I think Ron Rivera will be in the NFC East. I just don't think he'll be with the Eagles, unfortunately.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I love that. Guys that are head coaches for like 9 or 10 years don't jump back into being a coordinator. Like, there's not one guy right now in the NFL who is a long-term head coach that all of a sudden just said, yeah, I'll be a coordinator. Not one guy in the NFL right now is a coordinator who is a long-term head coach, fresh off of being a head coach.
What was Lovie Smith? What happened to him?
I don't think he's with anybody.
Did he just?
He may be in college.
Yeah.
His name just came up the other day, I remember saying. He may be in college. I'm not positive.
Because that name did jump to me as well, but I was looking at the other coordinators, and it's like nobody was a long-term head coach last year. And then, like, even, like last year, and then all of a sudden went to be a coordinator, like took that demotion. Like, even Jim Schwartz. What, he went to Buffalo and then took the year off and then came to the Eagles? Like, after he was with the Lions, I think he had some downtime, went to Buffalo, and then went to the front of the league office. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. You saw the news yesterday. The first news that broke was that Cole Hamels went to the Atlanta Braves on a one-year, $18 million deal. A deal, yes, I would have done, thinking of Michael Franco and Cesar Hernandez. If I would have traded those two players for one-year Cole Hamels, I absolutely would have. And then the news breaks that Zach Wheeler signs a five-year, $118 million deal with the Phillies to back up Aaron Nola pretty much in that pitching rotation. Good to see that. Going to be 30 years old. One hell of a starting pitcher, especially when it comes to the second half of the season. To help us understand this more and what the next move could be, we bring in Mr. Matt Gelb from The Athletic. Matt, what's going on, brother?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing good, man. Caught you on the MLB Network yesterday breaking down this deal. A lot of interesting things happening right now with the Phils, and we'll get into the next step in a second. But as of right now, Zach Wheeler is a guy who has put up great numbers, phenomenal numbers in the second half of the season. Why has he struggled coming out of the gate?
Well, I mean, look, the Phillies are betting on upside here. I mean, he doesn't have a very long track record at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, when you look at giving a pitcher like him more than $100 million, I mean, it's almost unprecedented. You know, he doesn't have a lot of innings. He's only made 30 starts in two seasons before, but really they're betting on upside here. I mean, this guy's got great stuff. He missed 2 years coming back from Tommy John surgery, and since he's come back, he's really grown into a different pitcher, and they think there are adjustments they can make. He's going to throw harder at a more consistent rate than any Philly starting pitcher has in a long time. So I think they're really betting on his upside here. And I think they looked at the rest of the market, and if they weren't going to be bidding for Gerrit Cole or Steven Strasburg, Zach Wheeler was the third best starter available this offseason. And let's be real. I mean, the rotation was their biggest need, and they had to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. When you look at a guy, though, like Zach Wheeler and how much work the Phillies still need to put in to improve this team, to compete with the likes of the Braves and the Nationals, how much does Zach Wheeler really push the ball forward for him?
I mean, they're not one player away from winning this division. I mean, that was the case before they signed Zach Wheeler, and that remains the case now, even though they've got Zach Wheeler. I mean, it's going to be really interesting, I think, to see how they piece this thing together for the rest of the offseason. They are probably going to try to stay under the luxury tax limit, which means they don't have a ton of money to spend. I mean, they need another infielder. They probably need another starter. They need at least 2-3 relievers. I mean, I think, look, they're betting on a lot of guys having better seasons than they did last year. They're betting on Andrew McCutchen being healthy. They're betting on Jake Arrieta being healthy. They're betting on some of the relievers being healthier than they were last year. They need some guys inside to step up. But, I mean, look, like, the Braves and the Nationals aren't going anywhere. I mean, the Braves have spent a ton of money this offseason. The Nationals won the World Series. They're trying to re-sign Strasburg and Anthony Rendon. And this is a tough division. I mean, they have to find a way to get to 90 wins. And I don't know if there is a foolproof way to do that this offseason. Those teams are really, really good.
And that's what we're talking about a lot today, is that a lot of the enthusiasm or excitement about a signing like this for a guy who is this good and certainly has more upside, more potential, it's kind of tempered just a little bit because you know how big the mountain is you have to climb in this NL East. Now, moving forward, what's the next move? If the Phillies are going to make a next move, where would you like to see them go?
It's got to be on the infield. And the luxury that they have right now is they don't have to get, like, a shortstop or a third baseman. They could get – they need just an infielder because they have Scott Kingery and Gene Segura who can play any of the three infield positions. So, for example, they like Didi Gregorius, and it makes a lot of sense. It's easy to connect the dots. He played for Joe Girardi. He's a shortstop. He's, you know, he's coming off of an injury-marred season, and he's looking to kind of rebuild some value. He makes a lot of sense. He's good in the clubhouse. He could play shortstop. You could put Kingery at third base, Segura at second base. But if the Gregorius thing doesn't work out, they can look at other infielders. But I think they need to get the infield shirt up before they start thinking about anything else. They have to figure that out now.
Matt, like you said, because you have Atlanta in front of you, who's done a lot of moves, and you have Washington, who's come off a world championship just now, does that prohibit the Phillies from maybe looking at doing one-year signings? Like, maybe they need to look longer term when they're signing contracts?
I don't think so. I think now you're going to start to see them shift to more short-term ideas, you know, because they have now locked up so many players in the last 3 years. I mean, let's not forget, in 2018, 2019, the last two off seasons, there's no team in baseball that has spent more money in free agency than the Phillies, and a lot of that is in long-term contracts. So I think what you're going to do is try to see them go shorter term now for the rest of this offseason, looking for upgrades there, and they need some of their younger players. I mean, they're probably going to go with Adam Haseley in center field and Scott Kingery at second base. They like Alec Bohm, who will probably be up in the majors at some point in 2020. When you have a payroll, when you have a roster right now that has some big time contracts on it, you also need some of your younger players to come up and be contributors, everyday contributors too. So, you know, I think they're going to look shorter term the rest of this offseason, and they really need some of those younger guys, you know, Haseley, for example, to step up in 2020.
Speaking with Matt Gelb from The Athletic, would you have made the deal for Hamels?
You know, I think here's the thing. I think I would have made the deal for Hamels later this offseason. I think they were trying to figure out the bigger fish first. You know, Zach Wheeler is obviously younger than Cole Hamels. He's got more upside than Cole Hamels does right now at this point in his career. I think they liked Hamels, but maybe as like a fallback option, if they didn't get Zach Wheeler, maybe they would have tried to piece it together by getting two or three, you know, sort of mid-tier free agent starters to fill out the rotation. Look, I mean, they went and signed the guy who everyone considered to be the best option outside of Gerrit Cole and Steven Strasburg. So, you know, you're going to take that when you get the chance. It's weird to see Cole Hamels go to the Braves. I think it's going to make for good drama during the season. I mean, we're going to see him quite a bit. If Cole Hamels is the pitcher he was in the first half of last year before he got hurt, I think he's worth $18 million because he could be, you know, I certainly think he could match that production in one season. I understand why they were trying to figure out the bigger problems first. I don't know. Do you guys think he's going to get booed when he comes back?
I don't think he does. No. I don't think he does, especially when he put it out there that there wasn't a lot of interest from the Phillies to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were interested, but certainly not. They had not reached $18 million yet.
Right, exactly.
Because of the other things they're entertaining, because they wanted to give, you know, Zach Wheeler more than $20 million a year. I think they were interested. I don't think they were anywhere near interested that the Braves were.
Mm-hmm. Matt, if they don't make another signing for a starting pitcher, do they look at Spencer Howard differently? Or are they going to take their time with him? Are they going to try to rush him up? How do you see that playing out?
Well, I think there's a couple of things at play here. Howard is definitely a factor for 2020. I mean, he had a dynamite season in the minor leagues. He finished it really strong in the Arizona Fall League. This guy is a legitimate pitching prospect. He's one of the better ones in baseball. The problem is he missed some time last year, and he really hasn't built up his innings. I suspect they're going to try to start him out a little slow in the minors, maybe not even starting him every fifth day to try to conserve some of his innings, because they're going to want to use the bulk of the innings that he has in the majors next year. He's definitely in play. I mean, they're going to have to figure out, they're going to piece together the back of this rotation, most likely. They might go out and get like another veteran guy on a one-year deal for the back of the rotation. But really, the onus is going to fall on guys like Zach Eflin and Spencer Howard. I think Spencer Howard is a major character for next season. He is an important piece, but I do expect that they'll probably try to bring him on slowly. He won't be in the majors to start the season.
Speaking with Matt Gelb from The Athletic, how about luxury tax? Do you see the Phillies going over it, and how close are they to it right now?
I don't see them going over it. Mm-hmm. The people I've talked to within the organization suspect that they are operating where they can't go over it. They've never gone over it. in the history. It's been around now for a little more than 20 years. They've never gone over it, and that means that, you know, there's different ways of accounting for payroll, but they essentially have about $20 million in annual salary to play with here for the 2020 payroll. And it's not a lot when you consider the amount of holes they have right now, and it's why they might not get Didi Gregorius, because they have to decide, well, what do we, if we go out and spend a lot on an infielder, does that mean that we can't add another starter? Does it mean that we can't add two relievers? They're going to have to do some real juggling here, and I think it's going to require them to be creative. I think they're really tying their hands behind their back here. I don't know if it's the best strategy to not go over the luxury tax limit. And I'm not saying that going over the limit is going to guarantee that they field a winning team next year. The history in the league suggests that that's not true. But given the situation they have, you know, they might have to try to outspend some of the problems they have. So,
yeah.
I it's subject to change, I think. You know, if a need arises during the season especially, and they say, well, look, we're in the thick of this, we got to go out and get somebody, but it's going to require us to go over this tax limit, I think they have to consider it. They have to.
And possibility of Rhys Hoskins being traded?
I still think that's low. I mean, really, okay. You'd be selling low on him. I mean, he's coming off of a disappointing season. Why would you want to move him?
Mm-hmm. I'm of a similar mindset. And then the other name I want to ask you is Gene Segura.
I doubt it. I mean, he's got a lot of money owed to him. I think they like his versatility right now. There's a scenario maybe where they flip him for another contract if it means getting a pitcher back, but I think he's on the roster in 2020.
All right, Matt Delb from The Athletic. We appreciate you coming on. Give him a follow on Twitter, Phillies fans, at Matt Gelb. Thanks so much, brother.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, absolutely. Matt. Doing a great job covering the Phillies for a while now, Matt Gelb. Yep. That's an interesting thing. I know that name has kind of crept into some trade rumors, or at least trade block-worthy guys in Rhys Hoskins, but Matt's exactly right. You're selling low on a guy that might be able to get you a little bit more with an up year in this coming season, or even prove that you want to keep him around. 610-632-0975. Coming up in a minute, as promised, we will get back into that Eagles locker room, let you hear from guys like Jalen Mills about his performance against the Dolphins as he talked to the guys at Quick Slants yesterday on NBC Sports Philadelphia. Time of the Fanatic is 8:41.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning. The Fanatic.
Coming up, we'll be joined by Mark Jackson in about 10 minutes, but right now, we got to get back in that Eagles locker room before we move on any further down the road here, because Jalen Mills talked to our man, Derek Gunn of NBC Sports Philadelphia for their show Quick Slants with Barrett Brooks. And Jalen Mills got asked about getting beat by Ryan Fitzpatrick again and not being able to have an answer for it is ridiculous. And we'll also let you hear from Jim Schwartz a little bit later. But here is Jalen Mills about what happened against the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah. I mean, you had a guy, Fitzpatrick, he got hot, and then you had a receiver get hot. You know what I'm saying? Those guys get paid, too. And, I mean, it was just their Sunday. You know what I'm saying? So as far as that goes, like you said, watch the film. You know, we made the correction. We got to go back and go out there and play our football on Monday night.
Is this team as kicked off as it should be right now?
We lost our last three games. So, of course, you know, that's not, you know, characteristic of us. You know what I'm saying? So, of course, we are.
Yeah, characteristic. You haven't won more than two games in a row all year. What do you mean it's not characteristic? Yeah. Lose three games in a row shouldn't be that much of a surprise, despite the fact that it was against the Dolphins.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is the game that those are the games that you should have won. Yeah, I mean, so you should be pissed off. I mean, you should be pissed off, especially when you just had the performance that you just came out of, where even when your defensive coordinator is coming out and saying, look, you know, you guys lost this game. So what are you going to do?
How are you going to step up? Well, as a defensive coordinator, as Jim Schwartz, right? And I've defended the guy all year, but you don't have any adjustments in that Dolphins game. And you've been adjusting all year long from game to game, very rarely within the game. You saw things start to work for you. Well, you came out of the gate strong, right? Defensive line especially. Mm-hmm. Tim Jernigan was in the backfield. Josh Sweat was in the backfield. Fletcher Cox was in the backfield. Right. And then the Dolphins just started getting rid of the ball quicker, and that was that. Yeah, you still got three sacks in that game, but you could have had a lot more, but there was no adjustment being made. So what was the adjustment they were going to make? What was the substitution maybe they would make in that game for a guy that might play more physical than Ronald Darby or Jalen Mills? Jalen Mills surprised me by how little he competed in that game. You can't have a touchdown over your head the way it was. And what was it, 13 total that Jim Schwartz counted? Mm-hmm. 13 total jump ball situations. The Eagles won three of them?
Yeah, I think three or four.
Three or four. That's ridiculous. Yeah. Especially when you have guys like Jalen Mills, who so consistently competes and plays with that edge. No edge. And when he doesn't have that, that's like 90% of his game going away. Because that's what keeps him involved in plays. That's what keeps him on receivers, is his ability to compete. When he chooses not to, and when he chooses to try to just draw an offensive pass interference call, like, that's where you lose all confidence in him.
Well, that's what's disappointing, too. I mean, you mentioned it, Mark. They come out, they had 14 points at halftime, did Miami. They come out in the second half, and it's throw, throw, throw all the time. They find Gesicki, and you can see what they're doing. Two, three-step drops, as Trey noted earlier. They're getting rid of the ball within 2 seconds. Try something. It wasn't working. He comes out, Fitzpatrick comes out, goes 10 for 10. I don't know, Rasul Douglas, you want to give it a try? You want to bring safeties up? You want to try something different?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why is it kind of clear to us the same thing isn't working?
I don't know. I don't know. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. Dante in the Northeast. Dante, real quick, are you confident the Eagles will win Monday night?
Am I confident?
Are you confident?
No, I'm not confident. Let me tell you why.
Because they lost to the Dolphins?
Well, I mean, I'll be honest with you. That game had me so sick to my stomach. I love you. I love your show. I love you guys as a group, but I didn't listen to you guys Monday, Tuesday, or yesterday. Because I didn't want to have to deal with that. It was just humiliation.
I saw a lot of people tweeting us, but like, I'm going to have to take off from sports radio for a while.
I had to. I mean, and this is my thing. The reason why I'm not so confident is because if this is Eli Manning's farewell tour from the Giants, he's getting everybody back healthy. That's not going to be good, especially with, you know, if Fitzpatrick just looked like Tom Brady 10 years ago.
If that's what happens, yeah, if that's what happens, then it's just like clean house. Like I said, even before the Dolphins game, you go down and you lose that game, you got to move on from coaches. Like there's nobody that should be survive that. And the only move that they made was cutting Mac Collins, and that was only because they wanted to protect somebody on their practice squad. That in itself wasn't even punitive.
I mean, honestly, I think me, you, Trey, everybody there could just do a better job at better than Howie Roseman at this point. But if you don't mind, can I get into this Zach Wheeler thing?
Of course, go ahead, man.
I'm a little nervous and on the edge about it. I would have understood if you was able to get Zach Wheeler and Cole Hamels, but Cole Hamels got his deal before Zach Wheeler, you know, agreed to his.
Yeah.
I don't think Zach Wheeler's your true legitimate number one. I think he's a number two. So now you're going to work with two number twos and not a number one, where, you know, Cole Hamels agrees to his deal before Zach Wheeler does. Wouldn't you have, you know, me in my eyes, you want to have, you know, a bit and offer Garrett Cole more money?
Uh-huh.
If you're going to get your legitimate number one and not just two number twos?
Well, put it this way, Dante. Thanks for the call, man. At least you're getting two guys that are worthy, at least right now, of the number two role. Aaron Nola's number one. He's a Cy Young candidate 2 years ago. He didn't have a good year last year. They moved on from their pitching coach. They brought in somebody new. I think Aaron Nola will bounce back and get back to that kind of form. If not a top three guy like he was 2 years ago, maybe a top five guy, maybe a top 10 guy. That's a number one starter in Major League Baseball. Zach Wheeler does have that potential. We've seen it in the second half of the last two seasons to be that number one guy in a rotation, and that's including a guy like Jacob DeGrom pitching as well as he pitches. So when you look at a guy like Zach Wheeler, he no question can be a number two. I think he can definitely rise to a number one. If he's able to inch forward what he does in the second half of the season into the beginning part of the season, and Jamie, your theory about having him with a better starting catcher with JT Realmuto certainly has validity to it.
Yeah, he's had a turnstile. I think the Mets have had six catchers over the last 2.5 years mm-hmm. that he's pitched in. So, yeah, I mean, the best framing catcher in baseball should help him even more.
Absolutely. So you look at that coming into this rotation. At least now you have two number twos and not a number two and then three number fives. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's still nonetheless still an upgrade. It's a very good upgrade. It's something they needed to do. They did it. And as we just talked about with Matt Gelb, there is so much more work that has to be done.
Oh, he really threw some cold water on my DD excitement.
Oh, you love you some DD.
Yeah. I really hope they go over the luxury tax, man.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they've never done it before, and John Middleton talks a big game. Now's the time to do it.
Is it?
Yeah. Why do you care about John Middleton's money?
No, I don't. I don't care about John Middleton's money. And that was my question to Matt.
We've had near a decade of ineptitude. It's a good time to do it.
But do you have to have an eye of the future because the immediate road is blocked? And it's gonna be blocked big time.
Well, Arrieta's coming off next year. That's $25 million that frees up. Alex Bohm and Spencer Howard were being told are real deal, can't miss type guys. So
this might be a year where you see them out, you see how they are. It might be a year that you say, look, Washington and Atlanta are far better than we are, from the Phillies talking. Yeah. All right, we got to take a look at Bohm. This is kind of a year where next year we'll put in the
money. Well, at some point, the youth has to contribute to the money, right?
Well, that's the point. So
why not now?
Right. To your point, though, yeah, now would be a time to go over to luxury tax if you want to be competitive, because you're going to end up saving money on two of your younger guys if they end up giving you anything we expect of them, like a guy like Spencer Howard or a guy like Alex
Bohm. Even Haseley, if he's platooning in center field. Yeah. I mean, you have three guys there that might potentially be able to be very cheap contributors to this team. So, yeah, spend the money.
That would be a time, because you will save that money with the younger guys that aren't even arbitration.
And Arrieta coming off the books, which is huge.
Oh, that is. I can't wait
Tight. I'd love that. Bats
and all. See you later, basically. Yeah. But no, it's like when an owner gives out a $330 million deal like they did last year with Bryce Harper, and then they give out a $118 million deal. This is all great, and it shows the aggression of an owner, but it shows nothing will stop me when they go over the luxury tax. Like, we even talked about that with the Sixers, whether or not they were going to be willing to go over that luxury tax. And they didn't, but they still able to ink up a lot of good guys. But you look at it like the Phillies as well. You look at Josh Harris with the
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.